Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston on The Morning Show as Bradley and Alex, the most gender-neutral names that you can possibly have come up with. they literally, I feel like they almost hinted at it, or like maybe they were just like doing a fan service thing from time to time. I don't know what it was, but if they went there, that would be braver than the Marines and every, you know, sort of military organization combined. Like, wow, the power that they would have. Please go there.
Please, we need it in 2020. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I don't even know if they have a second season coming up, but I hope so. I imagine they would, right?
They have to. I think they were nominated for a bunch of Emmys.
Yeah, so that's why I ended up watching it. Totally worth it, by the way. What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chingona? What's good? Is it party in the USA or what?
That and then Backstreet Boys, Bye Bye Bye, back on the Billboard, whatever the fuck, top 100, because everybody's using those songs, you know?
I get it now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I don't cringe as much when I see an American flag right now.
Yeah, I mean, I still feel a way about it, right? But, you know, the memes that are coming out of it are hilarious. Like, there's this one joke on Twitter. It's like, cuff me before Kamala does. Like, that's not chef kiss. That's the funniest one.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I love it.
Some good ones. Most of them surrounding the fact that, like, oh, good, I can go back to roasting Joe Biden.
Yeah, like I'm watching all these Kamala jokes come in, because I mean they're just so easy because she's a cop. So it's, I think there's another one where it's like a Kamala when she asks me my pronouns before she throws me in jail, and it's like I'm like, damn, I love this, I live for this. Like, I just, it's too easy, it's just right there. But what do you think about the rumor that they said that Joe Biden said that it, the rumor is that he's going to retire and leave her as the president?
I've only seen things like that on, like, the conservative forums that I've been stalking.
It's so on Reddit.
Yeah, it's so interesting how, like, a lot of their rumors or even their memes that they mean to be very, like, you know, conservative and douchey, they end up on our side either, like, repurposed for our own, you know what I mean? Like, it's in some places we align in really weird, like, black and white ways. It's really interesting, but that's one of them that started over there, and it's been there for a long time, that it's like we're really voting Kamala into office, not Biden. And I'm just kind of like, I'm just gonna give it a minute. I am not fully there yet, guys.
There's that whole thing where there's a whole Twitter I follow that's just accidentally socialist. Accidentally left wing tweets. And it's like, they're like, oh, liberals just want like weed and healthcare. And it's like, yes. Like, that's like, mm-hmm. not weed, but like decriminalize, get people out of jail that were in there for like nonviolent crimes.
The trans, you know, like, ones are great too, because they get so confused that they're accidentally so pro-trans, and I'm just gonna like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, I love those. They're so strange over there on that side. I mean, racism really boils people's brains. Like, there's nothing left in there after the hate, you know? So, oh dude, the day that they kind of called Joe Biden winning, I blasted fuck Donald Trump really loud, and then I realized I'm not in Oak Cliff. And some like Twitter AV dude like rolled his windows down, his Camaro, right, a douchebag, and like he had the fucking gas station Oakley sunglasses on with his hat,
the ones where like, and he, the colored like, lenses,
yes, and he like slowed down, and I slowed down more because I was like, oh hell no, I'm not getting hate crimed right now. I was like, fuck that, but I'm not turning this song off either. So he just enjoyed the music because he wanted to listen to it, honestly. That's his problem, not mine. He could have rolled his windows up and blasted his like, you know, lynch in music and been very happy, you know? I don't know why. And also, fuck Donald Trump doesn't mean fuck you white man. And that's the problem with racism, right? Like, you, they think you're talking about them. And it's like, I'm not talking about you, bro. I don't even know you. I'm talking about, well, I mean, yeah. But, like, at the same time, it's like, my racism never cooked my brain, bro. I don't hate white people. I just hate, like, bigots. And if you're a bigot, then I guess I hate you, right? Like, that's it. Like, I don't hate white people. I hate white supremacy. And if you're part of that, then I guess I hate you too. Like, call yourself out, bro. I didn't do nothing to you. So racism be boiling people's brains. And Texas is still one of the most legal places to be, like, to have voter suppression. So, like, Texas is not fucking red. I don't care what anyone says. Like, it is extremely difficult to vote here, y'all. Like, I've had to register voters before. It is fucking difficult. You have to have the, you have to mail it in like 45 days in advance, and like they have to be 18 before they mail it in, not the day of. Like, it's so confusing here, y'all. So it's not a red state, y'all. And Fort Worth and Corpus Christi fucked it up, but Dallas didn't. So
no, Fort Worth came back.
Oh yeah, it did at the very end, right?
County came through. I was stoked on
so
that.
So it's just fuck Corpus Christi then.
I even posted about it because a lot of my family lives in Tarrant County, and I know they voted, and so that's why I was just like, wow, okay. And then like I was like,
just kidding, guys. You guys did good. You're good. Thank you so much.
But see, that's what I'm saying. It's not even like, it's just difficult. It's just very hard and confusing here, and the way everything was made to be at that point was very difficult for people. So I don't, Texas is not, y'all. It's just, it's, this is the most Texas has ever voted in the first place, and it's already super hard. So shout out to the people doing the groundwork, knocking on doors, canvassing, doing everything, because it's so difficult, y'all. But anyways, how was California that day? I saw the gentrifiers.
I was gonna say,
like,
here's your LA I don't know about that. I didn't go to that, but here's your LA contrast. The night before, on that Friday night, I went to a BevMo. It's like a liquor store, and me and my friends did, and we were in line and we checked out and we're about to walk out the door, and this dude who's like, he's like suited up, he's ready, he looks looking like he's about to go protest or something, but I'm pretty sure he was just chilling, like that was just what he was wearing that night,
his outfit,
but he kind of looked like that, you know. And before we left, he turns to us, he's like, hey, fuck Donald Trump. And we're like, yeah, that's right. Agreed.
Wow.
But he said it like really aggressively, but we were just like, uh-huh. Yeah, we thought we were going to get like attacked or something.
You thought he was going to be like, yeah,
so,
go.
He was so like aggressive about it, but that was the difference. We were like, yes, cool. And we just left.
That is a different vibe completely from over here.
Yeah.
Nobody gave a fuck over here.
No, dude. People were, I mean, it was really quiet on my side of town. This isn't like the most festive or active part of town. It's like a bunch of young professionals, I don't know, but just a few miles north of here in West Hollywood, they were losing their shit, going wild, and everybody was super happy and all that stuff. But I didn't join in, but I did feel better that day. My blood pressure was down.
It was a cute day, and shout out to the gentrifiers for going out into the streets. They gentrified in LA and being very happy about it. Good for them. I ain't changed my mind about both of them. So it's just, who do you want to fight? So who do you want to be yelling
nice
at?
It's nice to be like not fighting against like someone who's just like so, like, you know what I mean? Like fighting
the KKK?
Fighting against Trump and Trumpers. Like, that KKK, takes such a toll on you, whereas this now feels like we're now fighting still, but for progress instead of, like, stopping evil, it's, like, pushing towards progress. I don't know. It just feels different, and it feels, like, more fulfilling.
Yeah, and hopefully people don't get complacent, because literally nothing's going to change. It's going to kind of just stay the same. You know, things will continue. The concentration camps were built during Obama's term. So, I don't know. People shouldn't forget that. And I'm probably too leftist now. Like, Trump done made me this crazy leftist now. I don't see it for a lot of Democratic policies either. So,
yeah, I mean, you're not alone in that. I think it's, people are, like, out there lecturing each other and all these things. I'm like, we already know that. I already know that. I don't like Biden. I don't like, I know. We got it. I'm happy for 2 seconds. Give me a second. Okay. But yeah, I don't know. That's how I kind of felt on that day when I saw certain things. But
yeah, no, I mean, we're there. We're past that. So hopefully.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I'm like, I get it. No, but yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of shows that I've been watching. But honestly, we've been bantering for way too long about the election stuff.
So, really? I think we're good. I think I want to hear what you've been watching.
Okay. And I guess I'll try to make it brief then. Yeah, I've been watching I watched the morning show. I just kind of binged it because I hadn't been watching TV in like weeks before this. And I'm finally back into that mode, which is not good, but it's also not bad. And the morning show was pretty brilliant. What it had in common to another show that I watched, which is Someone Has to Die or Alguien Tiene que Morir by Manolo Caro on Netflix, is that it just had that queer pain, POC pain, you know what I mean? Like some sacrifice has to be made to make an example of these people, you know what I mean? It has a very old trope they both did, and it really annoyed me. And it made me want to like not watch that anymore, not watch TV anymore again. But yeah, that's what I've been watching. What about you?
I've deep dived even further into K-pop. And
Jesucristo.
I think I should start a burner account for my Hwasa thirst.
I think so too.
I think I'm going to start it. And, you know, when I figure that out, I'll give y'all my ad. And I'm just going to tweet K-pop shit all day. And I've just been watching California Love 84 again. And even better, I've converted Glow into California Love. Now she is obsessed and she's watching everything, like even from the old stuff.
I love the old stuff so much. Oh my God.
Classic.
I've been go back to the old stuff. Because I'm not a big K-pop person, which is why I haven't been watching her at all lately. But her old stuff, oh my God, Elizabeth, you're still my hero.
She's hilarious.
Still my
hero. She's the most seasoned white Tina out there. and y'all, seriously, like, if you're into K-pop, go watch California Love 84. She starts off like me, like, what is going on? I don't understand this.
I used to watch those where she was just like, I guess I'll watch this. You know,
and she
mean?
Like read the PDF.
Yeah.
To all. Now being like, oh, this is my bias, and I'm like, same.
She's like writing her own PDFs.
Yes, she is the writer of the PDF now. So she's been bringing me a lot of joy as per usual, and I haven't really been watching anything to be honest. I've just been, I think, mentally, emotionally checked out, and I've just been focusing on K-pop because it makes me happy, and also like old school Julieta Venegas because. Why not? So yeah, music has been what's been getting me through this as opposed to like queer media, because I feel like it's really lacking right now, all queer media. And so unless I'm gonna watch like San Junipero again, like I don't really see what kind of happy thing I'm gonna watch. So I'm just
super quickly, speaking of San Junipero, Mackenzie Davis is coming back as a lesbian.
Yes, she is.
What is it fucking called? The Happiest Season?
It's called Happiest Season, but it's directed by Clea DuVall.
We like her. We like But I'm a Cheerleader.
We love that. And we love Clea DuVall. I mean, it's going to come out on Hulu November 25th. I'm excited because it's a lesbian rom-com, but I'm not excited because of all the other things that we've talked off air.
The closet trope. Though, I will say I still can't, because maybe I've been conditioned this way, but I can't, and I don't really like watching movies where they are an established lesbian couple, you know? It bores me, I don't know, but...
You want new love, falling in love.
Or something, you know what I mean?
Like, you want a love story.
If they're already established, like, I'm sorry, but we lesbians can be quite boring.
Yeah, there's nothing, we're just gonna stay in and be domestic and get a dog or cat and cook.
It's just
I'm gonna make this go a little bit longer just because I feel like this is potentially also queer. It's called Gunpowder Milkshake. I don't know if you've heard of it.
It has vaguely familiar.
Okay, it has Angela Bassett, Michelle Yu, Lena Headey, and they're all wearing power suits. So, and guns. So I don't know.
I saw a poster for it.
Yes,
where it's very colorful.
Yes, very colorful suits.
But we
don't
know
if
it's a
heist movie or an action movie. I don't care. It has Angela Bassett and Michelle Yu. They're beautiful. They're all like seasoned women who can actually act and who are also not white. Like, wow. Like, and then Lena Headey, come on. We love Cersei. And we love imagining you. Headey? It's probably Headey. I always said Headey because I never knew. But I just called her Cersei.
It's almost time for my annual rewatch of Imagine Me and You. Yeah. Almost time.
Okay. And when you watch that, I watch I Can't Think Straight or something. So that's
Saving Face.
Those, yeah. Saving Face as well. I've watched that recently. Anyways, I watched it recently too. It's a classic. I bought it on Amazon, so you can watch it whenever.
That's why I could watch it. That's why.
Oh yeah, that's why you could watch it. I purchased it. Yes. Anyways, yeah. So
let's do. Are you ready to get into today's topics? Shall we stop bantering?
Yes, let's get into what we're talking about today. I'm actually really excited because I've been wanting to talk about my subject for a minute since I saw it, and I've seen it 3 times since. So.
God, that's a lot. Okay.
It's so, yes.
Well, then go ahead. You first, ma'am.
Okay, so today I'll be covering Rada Blank's 40-year-old version. Now, if you haven't heard of it, it came out recently on Netflix. It premiered at Sundance. And you know what? I'm going to give Lena Waithe her props because she was the executive producer on this. One of them, right? But I thought that was so dope. And I thought that was so smart of her to like give someone her money and to see talent somewhere else. And I really appreciate that. So shout out to Lena Waithe for giving Rada Blank that producer money. So Rada Blank is a lovely, lovely movie. It's actually set in black and white. It's about a unfulfilled ex-playwright. She's going to be 40 soon. She's not working in theater. She had one play maybe 10 years ago. No one remembers. And now she's instead a theater teacher to high schoolers where they're talking about like penises and sex and stuff. And she's trying to like make sense of that as she's turning 40. She's recently lost her mother. And I think that's contributing to her, you know, midlife crisis coming of age that is happening in this movie. She's losing a lot and regaining a lot and regaining kind of her sense of self. I love this movie so much. It's set in New York. It's set in Harlem. And that's very important to the story because a lot of this story, a lot of what Rada Blank is doing in this movie is she's trying to be authentic. She's trying to be her most authentic self. And she's trying to redefine what authenticity is to herself. So she's still screenplay writer. She still wants to be a director, a writer. She still wants to do all these creative things. But at the same time, she's being stifled by the creative community in New York. With the help of her best friend, who is actually, I love this, casually, he is casually a gay Asian man, and they are casually best friends. It's never fucking brought up. Like, he's never meant to be, like, this token best friend gay. You know how the movies usually do that? They'll have, like, the gay guy best friend, but it's, like, a weird dynamic. Like, he's there for, like, show.
Yeah, he's not tokenized. Definitely.
He's not the Will or her Grace, right? Like, he's like his own person, and like he actually gets to be also very Korean and very gay and very rich and very privileged. So there's dimensions to his character, and also a lot of dimensions to her character because she's struggling. She's fat, casually. This is everything that we asked for, Maitha. Like, she is a fat black woman, and no one, it's not necessarily brought up in the way that most like white women talk about their fatness, you know, like in Shrill. Like, it's the whole point of the show. She's so insecure, she can't find love because she's fat. Well, like, Rada is like, nah, bitch, I'm black and I'm beautiful and I'm fat and I'm beautiful and I don't give a fuck. That has nothing to do with anything. It's more like she's a failed playwright, and that's what the focus is in this movie.
It's a midlife, like, crisis, really. The whole, you know, she's turning 40 and she's like, what the hell is going on? Like, I'm feeling all these things. And she's like, I love the way that she talked about getting older. It's very blunt, it's very like honest. I love her honesty, especially when she raps. But continue.
Oh, when she raps. So this is like the most interesting thing that she discovers about herself in this phase of her life, is that she's discovering that she's actually like a badass MC. And it's not something that's new to her, it's just something that she's finally like stepping into. She's like had this imposter syndrome about her capabilities of, as a rapper, but as this movie progresses, you see her fully step into who she is, and it's like, she's not like Eminem, she's not finna be a, the next Cardi B or anything, but she is fully stepping into this multi-dimensional, multi-layered human being, and like, it's so casual the way it happens. It's not like, I mean, it's not casual that, you know, she felt forced to become a rapper because she almost killed her entire career because she met a white producer and got a little wild with it. I'm not going to ruin that. That was kind of funny. And then she felt the need to go, oh, God, I have to shift. I have to change. But really, it's not really a change. It's something that she's always had, and she's always had this ability. She, along the movie, meets this producer named Dee. He is an introvert. He is sweet. He recognizes her abilities, her talents as a writer. Anything that she is rapping about is actually more in this like sphere of like rhapsody. It's more of like this woke. She's like having this woke internalized monologue about the things she wish she could say to like, what is it, like upper crust theater New York people, about authenticity, about what does it mean to sell out in the business? And it's a very frank conversation about selling out in the business, which we know people do so that they can get, you know, they anywhere can actually make anywhere. Yeah.
So they can break yes. in at all. Yeah.
Yes. They have to sell a part of their culture, a part of themselves, in order just to get a name, get a credit on something that they created, and they had to change completely to fit a white audience. So Rada is like venting as this alter ego that she names Rodimus Prime. And the most beautiful thing is that that actually is based on her reality. This movie is based on her, somewhat on her true life, that she did, she does rap in her spare time, and she's very fucking good in her spare time.
Absolutely. She's fantastic. Did you find out or read it or at all about why she chose to make the film in black and white?
I didn't. I assumed it was like an ode to like Spike Lee, who she worked with for, she was a writer on She's Gotta Have It.
I can see it. You know what I mean? I can see the inspiration quite a bit. Like, yeah.
What did you read about it?
I didn't. I was curious about what the choice was, you know.
That was my assumption with it, just because of her influence and the influence of, you know, Spike Lee and her working on She's Gotta Have It. She also worked on Empire. She was a writer for Empire, so shout out to her.
Yeah.
She said it bought her a house, so.
That's impressive. Yeah,
it's very impressive.
She has some credits. Yeah, it's so funny seeing her She's Gotta Have It credit, because I was like, yeah, this definitely got that Netflix New York vibe, you know, and women empowerment vibe.
And somehow her work by itself is funnier, richer.
Yeah, it's much, much more like up to date, if you will.
Up to date. Like, it's just, she is a force. This entire movie is literally the representation I've been begging for my entire, I don't know, since Musi Danmari, right? I'm like, no, I want people to tell their truth. I don't want it to be universal. And that's what she was talking about in this whole damn fucking movie, is she's creating this play that she's having to change for white people. And at the very end, she's like, fuck that. I'm not doing that. Like, y'all can go shove this up your butt. I'm leaving. I'm not selling my soul for this. And I'm going to stay true to myself. And I think that's a very brave, hard thing to do. And she did it in her own way. Like, first she had, you know, write for She's Gotta Have It, which I didn't very much like. And then Empire, which is also enjoyable the first season, but full of stereotypes, full of, I'm sure, producers walking into that room telling them to make it more, I don't know, as she put it in the, you'll see what happens in the movie and how they decide to make the black characters and how they make the black women caricatures. And that's the beautiful thing about this movie, is that she's not a caricature, and she's so fucking funny, and casually she is all of the things we ask. She's not, you know, they hint at a diet, but it's just a hint, and she talks about eating ribs, you know? It's like, well, thank you. she's casually talking about race in America, and in the context from a black woman, from a fat black woman, and it's so casual. It's not something to be discussed. She just is. And I think that's beautiful. I think that's about motherfucking time. This is what I asked for. I am obsessed with this movie. I saw it 3 times. I'm going to watch it again, probably. It's probably top 5 movies that I'm going to rewatch. Sorry if y'all heard booger. And I think... I'm sure I'm leaving things out. There is a queer component that is very subtle, and it's very like.
Let's talk about it. She kind of gives a lot of depth to these really small characters or these really small scenes where a lot of people, I feel like other writers or other directors might like chalk it off to like, oh, that this is a part of what it's like to be in the hood, and it's like, no, like these characters have depth, like, and she recognizes them as a teacher. She recognizes like. These, you know, internal things going on with her students, and like it evolves into something more, and she confronts them, and she gives them an opportunity and a chance, and like, I don't know, she just, I'm not gonna spoil it because I think it's really cute, but yeah, there's a small little like moment with 2 queer youngsters, and it kind of builds up throughout the whole movie, and when I saw it, I was just like, so it was powerful. I was like, this is really, really, really nice to, like, to not have, like, left them in this, like, obscure moment towards the beginning of the film of, like, you know, like, violence and, like, anger, you know, like, it turned into something real and really, really heartwarming.
And that's just, like, that's her attention to detail, dude, as a director, as a writer, as an actor in this movie. She was all 3. So, like, imagine, like, she saw all the details. And there's even, like, a side-by-side comparison of how she kind of mirrored a lot of scenes from Purple Rain, from Princess Purple Rain, the movie, to scenes in her movie. And I thought that was really fucking interesting. And I was like, I love what she's doing. This is incredibly smart, incredibly well thought out. And they just need to give her more money to let her write more things alone, not with other people, hopefully, and to not change her creative soul and just let her be. Because honestly, I am that queer little girl in that movie. And the way that she was flirting with Rada, I was like, oh my god, this is me in college with my professor. I was always just like, hi professor, what are you doing today? I like your boots. Like, anyways. But yeah, so y'all, whatever you're doing, please go watch this movie. Please up the ratings. We need to give Rada everything. She is the most fucking hilarious person. She had the funniest Hotep joke on Halloween. She dressed up as a black Israelite, a Hotep basically, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's just, oh, it's so inside and it's so true to like her experience specifically, and I love that. If you're gonna do something, be authentic to yourself, and that's it, and that's all I ask. So 6 pan dulces to this fucking movie. I'm obsessed. I love it. It makes me so happy, and I'm probably gonna have to go watch it again to make myself happy, because a black woman who's fat getting love and being treated that way so softly, like, come on y'all, get the fuck out of here. That was beautiful too. Anyways, I'm sorry, 6 pan dulces.
And that's the 40-year-old version, as in VERSION. It's on Netflix, super easily accessible, and it's really, really, really good. Like, just a genuine ass movie. Yeah, a great watch, put me in a good mood too. And
what are you gonna be talking about today?
A show that really, really weirdly relates to this. Really, really weirdly. It's called Woke. It's on Hulu. And it's about a man kind of going through the opposite thoughts as Rada, where, you know, where Rada is trying to not sell out. She's trying to, you know, do things the hard, nitty-gritty way and, like, work her way up, but, like, without selling her soul. He's the opposite. He's perfectly fine, like, just, like... He wants to push ahead, pursue his dreams, you know what I mean? Without, like, with the path of least resistance when it comes to his identity and when it comes to inequality. He's wide asleep, not awake. He's, like, he doesn't want to look at it. He's just, you know, he just wants to do his thing, not worry about it. And yeah, so it's in, like, a weird inverse of what the 40-year-old version is. But to get into like the background a bit, Woke was co-created by Keith Knight and Marshall Todd. And for Keith Knight, the show is slightly autobiographical. And it's based on the K Chronicles, which is a comic about his life, his wife, and his children. It premiered on September 9th on Hulu, so it's fairly new, and I haven't heard a lot of buzz about it at all. But the main character is Keef Knight. I like Chief Keef, you know, Keef Knight.
Chief Keef, Keef Knight, and I love that.
And he's a black cartoonist living in San Francisco. He's on the brink of being a huge success. He's about to get syndicated, and everything's going great for him. His girlfriend is successful. She's beautiful. He's out, like, taking promotional photos for a convention he's going to be featured at, and that's going to be a big change for him, big moment. It's all about his popular comic characters, Toast and Butter, like very simple, light things that he creates. And despite, like, every now and then he runs into a fan of the show who does the whole, oh, I didn't think you were black, but they never say that, you know, they never finish that sentence. And other than that, like, he kind of doesn't really concern himself about it. He doesn't care. And he's kind of honest about that, which is interesting. Because when a fan comes up to him, who's a black woman, at a comic book store, and she comments on how his work is great because of subtle comments about race and colorism, he's genuinely confused. And he's immediately, like, on the defense. What? And he's like, why do POC always have to, like, say something with their work? Why can't we just do our thing? Which is what he's been trying to do, right? But she, of course, is wide awake to the reality of the world that they live in, and she tells him, like, your mere existence is controversial. A black cartoon artist or cartoonist, like, you are controversial. There's nothing you can do to avoid it, even though he very adamantly avoids it, and he doesn't really take it seriously, and he stays firm in the attitude of, like, I'm lighthearted, my work is light, I'm not trying to ruffle any feathers, you know, like, that's his, like, life, like, motto. But it turns out her words were kind of a prophecy for the rest of his, like, life. So what happens next is basically happy-go-lucky Keef has these bomb-ass AKG headphones. You know, just wanted to throw that in there because I have AKGs. And he strolls through the city with a stack of flyers and a stapler. And he's posting, you know, he's listening to music, he's posting up these flyers about the upcoming convention he has, promoting his work, and out of nowhere, and he doesn't realize what's going on because, like I said, he has headphones on, he's mistaken for a suspect in a robbery, and he's brutally taken down by the police. And one of his roommates, he has two of them, and one of them is white, the white one, he sees the commotion from afar, and he runs over, and he goes at the police with everything he's got, right? And it's kind of like in slow motion, and Keef is watching this because he, you know, his head is like down on the concrete, but it's facing to the side, and he sees it, and Keef, like, watches the cop put his gun away, holster his gun, while this white dude charges at him and pushes him and threatens him, yet Keef is still on the floor, on his back, like, with knees on his back, holding him down, and he hasn't even resisted, hasn't done anything. And it's a tale as old as time, like, Keef, like, doesn't, like, understand why would this happen to him. He, like, doesn't, he never thought it would happen to him, even though he was aware of how it happens to black people all the time. So, it kind of, like, throws his life into a whirlwind, and he's just left completely reeling, and his trauma comes to life in the form of inanimate objects suddenly becoming animated. And they kind of serve for the remainder of the show as this newfound wokeness and his subconscious thoughts about race. You know, that thing in the back of your brain, you're walking around living your life, but you can't help but notice fucked up shit. He has that now, and he didn't before, supposedly. So he starts noticing things around the city, like the gentrification of a barbershop in his neighborhood called Darnell's, which he goes into and finds only white dudes. Who talk about how Darnell retired, but they kept the same vibe of the shop, whatever that means. He's suspicious,
whatever,
right?
That is.
And then he notices that his headshots that he took earlier were photoshopped to lighten his skin. He notices how his other roommate, who is black, is constantly hooking up with women who buy into stereotypes about black men. And ultimately, he loses his shit about everything that he can't unsee at the conference, exactly where he doesn't want to.
Ooh, in public, where cameras are.
Exactly. So, obviously, he starts kind of facing the consequences of his wokeness. And he's, like, kind of reminded by another person and quite frankly, he's inclined to return to the race doesn't matter place, right? The complacent, like, non-controversial place. He wants to be okay with not talking about difficult things, and he wants to go back to appeasing white audiences because it was so much easier, supposedly. And he's even told to, like, do his time, kind of like Radha was felt like she had to resort to. Like, everybody's telling him, like, you need to just do that. I think they compare him to, oh my god, what's that dude's name? The singer. I hate to say it, but Chrissy Teigen's husband.
Oh, John Legend.
John Legend. They compared to John Legend. They said that he did his time, and then after that, he could start talking about race and doing his thing. Like, they start, you know what I mean? They basically say that that's what you have to do, which is what Radha struggles with in 40-year-old version. But he's got different attitude. He's like, okay, I'll do that. But he can't. He has these animated things telling him all these things in his ear, driving him nuts. And, like, Ayana, who she's the woman from earlier at the comic shop, she says, you can't unwoke yourself. Like, you're there already. So... now that we're getting into Ayana, let me just dive in real quick. Okay. She's my personal favorite on the show because she's like a self-identified gay woman, and she's the same person, like I said, who told him about himself at the comic shop, and she's a reporter for the Bay Area, which I was like, that's a name. But it is like a very woke publication. But other than, like, just enjoying her kind of observing little baby woke Keith fuck up and, like, progress and learn, we also see her strike up this friendship with Keith's roommate, Clovis, who's a straight dude. And we also get to see her, like, deal with an ex of hers. And just, like, really any moment that she was on screen, I was like, ooh, I like her. But she got so little screen time, as they always do, right?
Yeah.
I wish she had more. I think she... I mean, obviously, it's, like, Keith is the center, and then he has his two roommate sidekicks, and they're the side characters, and then Ayana's just, like, a further side character. Mm. But he's really, like, she's his window into the world, almost, because she's, like, fully there. She's fully in there. But I'm really genuinely curious to see where they'll go with their storyline, if this gets renewed. But to get to... try to be as vague as possible about where the series kind of goes, if you guys want to watch it. But it does get more complicated, and it veers into more difficult topics later in the season, especially when it comes to Keith's white roommate, Gunther, who is, like, this long, curly-haired pothead that you might recognize from Workaholics.
Yeah.
He has a lot of opinions about how Keith should deal with everything that's going on, and a lot of his advice is actually really healthy stuff, but he also very obviously lacks a true understanding about what it's like to be Black. And especially in America, like, he's just never gonna get it. So his advice becomes a bit moot when it comes to Keith's decision to confront the cop who attacked him. And, like, then later on, when, you know, the police situation kind of gets more serious and they start talking, like, it gets really intense really fast and really real. And then it kind of takes him to that next level of wokeness at the very end. I'm trying to be as vague as possible there. But it does go to a hard place, even though it's a comedy, right? Like, the show is supposed to be lighthearted, just like Keith wants to be. And so, honestly, like, the show, like, reflects what Keith is a lot, because it wants to be lighthearted, but its insides and its internal parts are woke. So I think maybe that's why it's not getting a lot of attention, because it doesn't veer 100% in one way or another. Like, it still wants to be light, and it still wants to be intense, and it wants to marry those two things. And it's a bit of a dichotomy that maybe doesn't work for people. I don't know.
That's a really hard thing to be able to do, too. Cause, and not just that, like, they're throwing in, like, a third, fourth element of the comedy with the Muppets.
With the animated, yeah. And it's definitely heavy. Like, they're annoying, you know, you're sitting there screaming at the TV, like, stop listening to your marker. But it's interesting because it has that same conversation, but from a different perspective that the 40-year-old version has. And then a final selling point for the show really is that some of the animated objects are voiced by really cool people. Nicole Byer, Tony Hale, Cedric the Entertainer, and a few others, and they're pretty good. I didn't even notice, if I'm being honest, that Nicole Byer was a 40, but...
You didn't notice? I immediately heard her voice, and I was like, oh, they are so smart. I love this show. I'm going to keep watching, because her voice is so iconic to me.
Yeah. You know, it's got great, like, I think it's got great visuals. Like, the marketing team did well. I mean, I just think that, I don't know, maybe it's star power, like, that it's lacking, because people are not watching this show. They're not. And it's a show worth pursuing.
I think it's what the topic is. I think people are... maybe I think
tired of that term woke, you know, maybe.
And not just that, I feel like the audience that they're marketing to already knows this, but really it's a show that needs to be maybe for white people, not black people. And I feel like the marketing was for black people, and it's like, black people already know this shit, right? It's,
yeah,
like, oh wait, triggering, I don't want to watch this, this is just my pain, no thank you. I'd rather spend 30 minutes laughing at something instead of like, oh, look at my trauma, you know? Like, it's, and I feel like if they were going to make it for white people, they should have marketed it better to white people, because I think honestly the people that need to watch this are white people. I don't think black people need to be reminded of their trauma constantly, even if it is funny and a lot of the jokes are inside. But at the same time, I don't know. I think the market is saturated,
because I think this was, you know, co-created and based on the life of Keith Knight. And it's his story, and he's telling his genuine story as a black cartoonist. Yeah. So it sucks that, like, you know, it's almost like we're telling him, like, hey, do this for white people. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I'm not saying that, like, he should be doing it for white people, but I'm saying that it felt heavy in parts where I'm like, damn, we don't. You know, it's kind of like when we watch stories where people get deported. Like, we don't want that, you know? Like, we don't want to watch more people getting deported. It's there. It's true. We know.
It walks a different line. Or it walks the line differently, maybe? I don't know. But
it's better. It's well done. It's very well done. But I think also the fact that it's on Hulu versus maybe Netflix has a big deal, too. Because most people have Netflix accounts, and usually with Hulu, you have to, like, know somebody who knows somebody to get that account. So I feel like that's another layer of it, that Hulu is very... I mean, Hulu doesn't have a lot of original black content. Like, they just canceled High Fidelity. So it's not like they're doing...
Oh, such a big mistake, dude.
Right?
But if they canceled High Fidelity, like, honestly, what are the chances of them... I want to say, like, what are the chances of them renewing something like Woke that's not even getting the views? But at the same time, the real reason... that I think they canceled High Fidelity is because they wanted to make the second season about the character that was a fat black woman. You know, that's the
that would have been better.
Yeah, it would have been way more interesting. That's the reason that they were like, I'm not gonna pay for this. You know, they wanted more Zoe.
Oh, I can see that, and how Zoe's schedule is probably really, really full right now.
So I guess that's maybe. That maybe gives you hope for a Woke coming back in that case. I don't know, but it's a better show than I expected. I thought because it was getting no buzz that it wasn't going to be that great. But it was actually, like, that's a show pretty you should watch. It's a really quick watch. It's, like I said, it wants to walk the line of light and hard to watch. Or heavy, I guess you would say. But I don't know. I definitely think it's a show worth renewing, at the very least.
It's pretty good. I've seen like 4 episodes, I think. It was back to back. Very, very well written, very funny, very original. Like, it's so original. I think it's just Hulu has a lot to do with that. And I think had it been on Netflix, I don't know, a lot of shows on Netflix aren't doing that well either. And they're supposed to be.
I don't place a lot of blame on Hulu. I think the marketing was probably not right. I think Woke maybe wasn't the, like, even though it's an accurate, it's a good name for the show, I don't think that it's attracting people.
Yeah, I don't think maybe the advertisers really did their job here. And also, like you said, star power. I feel like maybe they could have had somebody
literally
super
like
famous.
The least cared about character on New Girl and got his own show, which he deserved. But it's like, no, like, New Girl fans aren't following.
What character?
The main character. Well, he's on New Girl.
He got a show? I've never
That's
seen
woke.
New Girl. He's the main character
from Keith, like the person that plays Keith. He is in. He's one of the side characters in New Girl for all fucking 8 seasons of it or whatever.
Okay, forgive me. I never watched New Girl because it seemed why would really you?
Yeah.
Yeah, why would I? It's a I very specific
all of it in a week, but yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. No. Yeah. I it's like Gossip Girl. Like I was more of an OC person. Gossip Girl came on, I was already listening a little boozy. I was already out of that demographic, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, this isn't for
but
me.
But yeah, he was the least popular character on New Girl. He's the main character of Woke, basically.
He deserves that.
I would say I definitely give this like, I don't know, maybe like half a cafecito for some of the awkward points, and I wish this was a show about Ayana. But other than that,
like, right,
it's,
we always wish.
It's pretty solid. Like there's a lot of even like moments where they really talk about wokeness. Like it's an appropriate name for the show.
Yeah, I just it's sad because it's a really good show. I would give it like 4 panduces because it's very good. It's very funny. Anything that has Nicole Byer casually being a 40, that's hilarious. Like you win. So you get all my points.
Yeah, it's
for that.
It's interesting. But moving on from that, it's almost holiday seasons, multiple. I'm pretty sure we're going to be taking a break. Unless something miraculous happens and something great comes out, we're probably going to be taking a break for Thanksgiving, which means we'll be back in December.
My favorite month!
Yeah, of course. And the first, probably the first week, first Thursday of December will be a Patreon episode, and then the second one will be back for everybody. So just don't be surprised if we don't come back for a while. But like I said, we'll be on Patreon. There's a ton of episodes there, including an election night episode that we recorded with a bunch of our friends last week for you guys, I guess it would be.
Very drunk. I don't
like
remember it.
4-hour-long episode. Like, it's nuts. So if you guys want access to that, that's on patreon.com/CUSEpodcast. And speaking of, we need to do some Patreon shout-outs. So we're going to do that right now. For those of you that leave, go leave us a review on iTunes. We would highly appreciate it. We'll send you a sticker if you send us proof or just tell us that you did it. And we also have Teespring shirts. Check out the links in our bio and stuff. All right, FP, why don't you start us off with your peeps?
Yo, yo, yo. What's good, Patreon? I'll never do that again. Yo, yo,
thank
yo.
You.
Wow.
Please
that's
don't.
Cringe. I died
that
a little
was that
in my
scene
I,
that Rada
I threw
did.
Up in my
yo
I threw up in my
yo,
own
yo,
mouth
yo.
You know, yo yo yo, it's your girl who's not hip. Okay, and I said hip anyways. This I'm old. Okay, so I want to give a special shout out to all the Patreon people. Thank you so much for as everyone says, keeping the lights on, keeping us going. It's super important that y'all financially contribute to your broke girls, because Maita's out here fucking editing, fucking doing everything, busting her ass off. So please give us money for that, because it's actually a lot of work to produce this shit. And we have full-time lives, so it's a lot. Anyway, so thank you, Savannah. I feel like she's new. Thank you so much.
Brand
I
new.
Really appreciate
welcome.
That. You're brand new to the clique, to the gang. What's good? Shout out to Luna. I love your name, Luna. Shout out to Valerie. Shout out Geekies. Shout out Michelle. Shout out Heather. Rosaura. Shout out to our brother, Veto. Chrissy. I see you. You always like my tweets. I like your wood chopping skills. I need to work on my own wood chopping skills one day. I want to be strong as well. Shout out to Erica. Shout out to Mari Mad. Was good, girl. I love you so much. You're so fucking funny. Shout out to Rasi, my Scorpio season king. It's his birthday tomorrow. I just want to say I love you. Happy birthday if you're listening to this. You're an old ass man, 30-year-old man. I love you. Shout out Aaron. I also love you. I don't know when we'll see each other again, because this shit's so trash. So in 2022, I need to mail you something, by the way. And shout out to my baby mama, the mother of my child, the love of my Scorpio life. She's been keeping me sane this last couple of weeks. And Scorpio season is my favorite time because I get to love on her more. So happy birthday to my baby, who already said that in real life, but thank you again, baby. I love you. Anyways, I'm being corny. Anyways, your turn.
Oh my god, mine's gonna be so much like less emotional. Okay. Shout out to Sandra. I think you're pretty new too, so welcome. Favi, thank you for supporting. Thank you for being my sugar dad. Baby Dusho Shnigoro. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Thank you for supporting. Thank you to Lema and to Edith. You guys have been around for a while now. Noelle, our day one.
Noelle!
I always appreciate hearing from you any time of day. Yeah, she got the TikTok for the books. I follow her now.
Yes!
She's there. Try and find that so we can put it in the show notes. Future Cynthia. Alicia, all the way from Australia, supporting since day one. And of course, a couple of our Atkoides members are the very mysterious R. Thank you for supporting. Marisa, Mari, what's up? How's the pup? And Mireya, Cafecito Gang. I know you're Cafecito Gang because you got the merch to prove it. So shout out to you. Thank all of you for supporting because, like Frederica says, you keep our lights on. And we appreciate that. All right, guys, we'll see you in a few weeks. And I hope that you guys have good holidays and show appreciation to Indigenous people everywhere. All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye, guys. See you in a couple weeks.
Bye.